A recent article in The Atlantic attacked those who call the rosary a weapon. But even many Catholics today are uncomfortable with language that they find too militaristic. What does it mean to be the church militant? That's what we'll talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, just remind you to smash that like button. I don't know if I can keep saying that, but you know what to do with it. And also to subscribe, but don't bother notifying. That didn't really rhyme, did it? So subscribe, but don't notify. Okay. Also follow us on social media, blah, blah, blah. You know all that. Okay. And also before I get started though with our topic today, I did want to encourage you. I have an article out today, actually over at 1 Peter 5. It's not Crisis. It's over at 1 Peter 5. And it's basically about me attending an ordinariate mass. We've had a couple people on the podcast here. We had some articles at Crisis about the ordinariate. I attended an ordinariate mass the first time a few weeks ago. And I write about that and also about liturgical diversity and kind of get in the weeds a little bit about the liturgy and things like that. So if you want to check that out, that's at 1 Peter 5 today, which is August 16th, 2022. Okay, so let's get started on what we're going to talk about today. Now, I think most people by now are aware of the Atlantic article that was originally titled, let me get it here, How the Rosary Became an Extremist Symbol, with the subtitle, The AR-15 is a Sacred Object Among Christian Nationalists. Now, radical traditionalist Catholics are bringing a sacrament of their own to the movement. Now, they did change the title and the subhead two times since that initial article came out. They had a little image, which I thought was actually kind of cool, of the rosary that looked like it was firing, like somebody's a firing range. But I actually thought it looked kind of cool, and they've changed that. They've toned it down a lot because there's been such a pushback. In case you did not see the article yet or do not want to, I don't blame you. Essentially, some guy at The Atlantic is all up in arms because of the fact that there are what he calls radical traditionalist Catholics who are using the rosary, calling it a weapon, and using this militaristic language. It says, just as the AR-15 rifle has become a sacred object for Christian nationalists in general, the rosary has acquired a militaristic meaning for radical traditional or rad-trag Catholics. On this extremist fringe, rosary beads have been woven into a conspiratorial politics and absolutist gun culture. These armed radical traditionalists have taken up a spiritual notion that the rosary can be a weapon in the fight against evil and turned it into something dangerously literal. And essentially, he tries to argue for that. It's a terrible article. If you want to see one takedown of it, I wrote one yesterday over at Crisis called Weapon of Choice. So you can find it. Just go to the Crisis Magazine website and you'll find it. Weapon of Choice, I called it. It really is a howler. I mean, the article is so bad. It has so many problems with it. But I think like I said, you can get commentary on this from a lot of different Catholics. Some people have already posted up podcasts about it. A lot of people have written articles, comment on social media about it. A lot of good commentary out there. I personally am very happy with the fact that it seems that a lot of Catholics took this attack on the rosary and on Catholicism in general as a reason to pray the rosary more and be more open about praying the rosary. I mean, we should be very open. We should let everybody know that we pray the rosary. We should never hide that from people, and we should let people know the power of the rosary. I converted to Catholicism through the rosary. So I can't speak more highly of the rosary as an important tool, an important weapon in our battle for holiness. And so I'm very happy about that. I want to talk about something a little bit different that's related to this, because although this guy, what's his name? Daniel Panaton, I think it is. I have no idea who that is. And he probably has no idea who I am, so we're even. He's a Catholic, or if he is, he's a self-loathing Catholic, which is even worse. But I've noticed that a lot of Catholics, modern Catholics, are very uncomfortable with militaristic language, like the rosary is a weapon, something Padre Pio said, something Maximilian Kolbe said, other great saints and spiritual advisors have talked about the rosary being a weapon. But also they're just in general uncomfortable with just militaristic language used to talk about our faith and talk about our walk with Christ, our life as a Catholic, our spiritual life, and our totality of our life. So I wanted to address that because I've seen that before, where Catholics do not like the militaristic language. They want to stay away from it. But of course, we know, hopefully we know, that we're literally called the church militant. There are three parts of the church, I guess you could say. There's the church militant, the church suffering, and the church triumphant. The church triumphant are those saints who've gone before us and who are in the glory of God in heaven. So they're triumphant. They don't need to do anything else. There's the church suffering. Those are those souls in purgatory. They are part of the church, a real part of the church. They will not go to hell. They will one day be united to God in heaven. But they're suffering in purgatory. So the church suffering. We pray for them. There's also, though, the church here on earth, you and me. And we're called the church militant. That is a traditional term used for the church here on earth. It's the church militant. So clearly, there's a pretty deep vein throughout church history about this language of the church being an army, the church being militaristic, about us being involved in a battle, in a war. This is not something new that some rad trad Catholics, as the Atlantic would have it, have you believe, all of a sudden came up with and now are applying to their own conspiratorial theories or whatever the case may be. This is very deep. In fact, we just saw it this week. Today, like I said, 16th of yesterday was the Feast of the Assumption. This article came out on the 14th, which is interesting because that obviously that's a Sunday this year, and so that was the liturgical day was the Sunday. I think the 10th Sunday after Pentecost in the traditional calendar. I think 20th Sunday of Ordinary Time. I'm not quite sure, but it also is traditionally the feast of St. Maximian Kolbe. Is August 14th. And so it was interesting. It was released on that day when the day before Our Lady, we celebrate Our Lady's Assumption to Heaven, and the day of a man who literally called the rosary a weapon and talked in militaristic terms. But what I noticed was there's a few things I noticed just from yesterday, just from the Feast of the Assumption. When I was praying in my breviary, and I use an old one, the antiphon for the Benedictus, it was talking about Mary, of course, and it says, "Who is she that looketh forth as the morning, ascending like a dawn light to the highest heaven? So glorious is her splendor. She is fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners going forth to war." Let me repeat that last part, talking about our Blessed Mother. She is fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners going forth to war. I think language like this, which, by the way, comes from the Song of Solomon, chapter 6, verse 3. "Thou art beautiful, O my love, sweet and comely as Jerusalem, terrible as an army set in array." That's from Song of Solomon 6:3. So let me go back again to the antiphon. She's fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners going forth to war. I think most of us Catholics today would, of course, start this passage and say, "She's fair as the moon." Yes, she is. "Clear as the sun." Amen. "And terrible as an army with banners going forth to war?" That does not sound like the Blessed Mother as she is commonly portrayed. Yet this is liturgically how she is celebrated. Or how she was celebrated, I should say, because the new Benedictus antiphon in the new Liturgy of the Hours reads, "This daughter of Jerusalem is lovely and beautiful as she ascends to heaven like the rising sun at daybreak." This daughter of Jerusalem is lovely and beautiful as she ascends to heaven like the rising sun at daybreak. Now, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with that description. That is true as far as it goes. However, that is a very safe Mary. You know, of course, C.S. Lewis famously talked about Aslan, the lion, not being a safe lion. He's good, but he's not safe. And of course, that's comparing it to our Lord Jesus Christ, who is good, but not safe. But I would say the same applies to Our Lady. She is good. She's immaculate, but she's not safe. You don't see that in today's antiphon I mean, the modern antiphon, I should say, for yesterday. But you do see it in the old one. You see it very clearly. She's terrible as an army with banners going forth to war. Our Lady is terrible. That's not something we normally would say, but it's true. What that means is that if you're on the wrong side in this war, she's going to look to you like an invading army coming down hard on you. Think about if you're Satan and you're facing Our Lady. You know the prophecy. You know what Genesis 3:15 said. You know that she's going to crush your head. And so she is terrible. And so she is powerful and she does fight. She crushes the head of our adversary, of Satan. And in fact, that's another point from yesterday's from Feast of the Assumption. In the old calendar, the reading or the lesson, the first reading, was from the book of Judith. And it's talking about Judith here, but this is typology because obviously we're talking about Mary at the Feast of the Assumption. And it's applying what was applied to Judith applies even more so to our Blessed Mother. And at one point it says, "Blessed be the Lord who made heaven and earth, who hath directed thee to the cutting off the head of the prince of our enemies. He has so magnified thy name this day that thy praise will not depart out of the mouth of men who shall be mindful of the Lord forever." This, of course, harkens to when Mary and Elizabeth met, that you will be blessed, your name will be blessed forever. But notice what it says about Judith. She was directed to the cutting off the head of the prince of our enemies. And that refers to when Judith literally decapitated the enemy commander, the Assyrian leader, whom I forget his name, and I probably wouldn't pronounce it correctly anyway, but she literally cut off his head. And she's exalted for that. And it's a typology of Mary crushing the head of Satan. Now, in the new Mass, in Novus Ordo, the reading yesterday was from the book of Revelation and 1 Corinthians, the first two readings before the gospel. No mention of cutting off of heads. No mention of Judith or hearkening back to her. So you can see how I would argue at least, one of the primary ways in which we've forgotten and the reason we're uncomfortable with this militaristic language is because we don't hear it in the liturgy anymore. The lex credendi, lex orende, lex credende. How you worship is how you believe. And so if you remove, I mean, it's pretty famously known that I lost my train of thought there for a second. Oh, it's famously known that in the new liturgy, they removed a lot of the psalms in the liturgy of the hours. They removed some of the psalms that had very graphic language of like crushing your enemy's children's heads on rocks and things like that. And so that was all removed, and also was language about the Eucharist, bringing about condemnation on somebody who receives it unworthily, which, of course, we deal with today in the church. But that removal of the strong language, the controversial language from the liturgy, I think has had an impact, and it makes us automatically uncomfortable with using militaristic language. Talk about cutting off of heads, crashing babes' heads against stones, things like that just make us recoil. They're in the sacred scriptures, so they need to be dealt with. We can't just ignore them like the church seemed to want to do. But what we're doing is so we've become the point where we shy away from any violent imagery. And here's another example of this. Today in Crisis, there's an article by Dr. Ann Hendershot when she talks about the potential, the canonization path for Father Vincent Capodanno. He was a military chaplain at Vietnam, an American military chaplain at Vietnam. Heroic, completely heroic. He did so much. He literally shielded one of the soldiers from bullets with his own body. Just a heroic man. And the cause for his canonization is in preliminary process. Well, I guess some Vatican bureaucrats, Vatican consultants, they didn't really like the idea of canonizing this guy. And some reason might be because he was a promoted, he celebrated the Latin Mass during the 60s and things like that. But the reason they gave, the real reason they gave was with ongoing military actions in the world today, think Ukraine, raising someone from the military for veneration may not be appropriate for our church.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Playlist shuffled? Check. Drinks on ice? Check. Z-Biotics? Make the most of your time with friends by starting your evening with Z-Biotics, the only pre-alcohol probiotic designed to make those rough mornings after drinking alcohol a thing of the past. Z-Biotics is key for those who live for the moment. Visit ZBiotics.com to learn more.
And I just have to ask you, what are you talking about? What do you mean it's not appropriate for our church to raise somebody from the military? A chaplain who himself did not actually commit any acts of violence, I don't believe. But just because he was a member of the military, we are now supposed to shy away from him, be embarrassed by him or something like that? That's unbelievable to me. Now, let me be clear about something. I'm not a big fan of today's military. I think people who follow me and listen to the podcast, read some of the stuff I've written, know that. I think basically almost everything America uses its military for today is unjust and should not be used and things like that. So don't, I'm not like Mr. Pro-military here when I say this, that the fact is Catholic history is replete with military, people in the military being objects of veneration, for being saints, for growing in holiness, for the church endorsing military operations, for Catholic leaders endorsing military operations. The idea that we're supposed to now somehow be embarrassed by any militaristic imagery or anybody who's ever in the military is just ludicrous. And so that fact is just, you know, the fact that they don't want to canonize Father Vincent Capodanno because he was a member of the military is just ridiculous. When I don't think he, like I said, I don't think he committed any acts of violence himself anyway. We're speaking about acts of violence. Our Lord, perfect God, perfect man, he is sinless. He committed an act of violence. I saw somebody mention this today. I think it was on Facebook. I can't remember where. He committed an act of violence. After all, he made a cord of whips, and he drove out the money changers. He toppled their tables in the temple and things like that. You can't tell me that's not violence. And it's premeditated violence too. He had to make that cord. It wasn't like all of a sudden it didn't say like he miraculously had one appear in his hand. He made it, which means that he thought it out. He committed an act of premeditated violence. So clearly violence in and of itself, physical violence, is not a sin. It's a sin if it's unjust, if it's done out of anger, things like of that nature. But obviously we can commit acts of violence and it not be a sin. So this idea that we can't ever commit acts of violence or we should shy away from any endorsement of violence is ridiculous. Second thing is, today, most of us, not everybody listening to this, would not be Catholic or Christian. If you're not Catholic, you're not watching, that is. If it wasn't for violence. Now, Christianity did not spread through violence like Islam did. But Christianity had to defend itself from the violent spread of Islam. When Islam was spreading violently, Christianity spread through evangelization, word of mouth, things like that, not through violence. But Islam spread through violence. But when they started going towards Europe and coming on the Christians' Europe, what were the Christians supposed to do? Were they just supposed to pray only and not do anything? No, they had to fight back. They had to commit acts of violence against the Muslims to protect themselves, to keep Europe Catholic, and therefore keep us Catholic today. We would be Muslim today, more than likely, if it wasn't for acts of violence committed by Christians. So again, we can't just run away from imagery of violence. I was just reading recently, I'm going to talk about this in an article I have coming out soon at Crisis. I was just reading the story of St. Alfred the Great. I'm sorry, King Alfred the Great, who he isn't officially canonized, but he has been considered a saint in many quarters. He had to defend against the Viking raids of Wessex. This was in the 9th century. And England, the whole island was about to be, Britain was about to be overrun by Vikings. Most of it had been. Most of England was modern day England, was overrun by Vikings, pagan Vikings. And they were going to take over the last part, which was Wessex. But King Alfred resisted them through violence to keep that from happening. Imagine a pagan England. I mean, unfortunately, England is in a lot of ways pagan today. But imagine a pagan England starting in the 9th century that would never have been part of Catholic Europe. But because of King Alfred using violence, he was able to stop that. He was able to use his army and prevent that from happening. And in fact, when he won, this is something I'm going to talk about in my article, he actually had one of the terms of surrender for the Viking leader was to be baptized with Alfred as his godfather. I don't think we'd be doing that today, would we? So the fact is that we should not, as Catholics, shy away from violent imagery, militaristic language. In fact, I would argue we need this type of language. We need this type of language to be a faithful church and to be a strong church. And I would argue, and there's lots of different reasons why things have started to go, have gone, been going south for the church, particularly in the Western world for the last 50, 60 years. But I would argue one of them is a refusal to look at the Catholic life as a battle. The fact is that our life as a Catholic is a battle. First and foremost, it's a spiritual battle every single day. If you aren't fighting every day, you're going to fall away. That's just, I mean, that's just as true as if you jump off of a building, you're going to go splat. If you stop fighting, you're going to die in the spiritual life. It's a constant battle. St. Paul talks about this, that our battle is not against flesh and blood, against principalities, powers, in this present darkness. There is a battle for our soul going on, and it's a spiritual battle. It's a spiritual battle between the angels and the demons for our soul. And we have to be involved in that, and we have to realize we're in it. If you don't even know you're in a battle, you are going to lose. And so that's why we have to use this spiritual, this battle language. And honestly, it's a reason that our parishes are so effeminate these days, that we have so many young men who are not interested in Catholicism, because they go to their local suburban parish, and what do they see? All this language about, oh, let's just have a relationship and you know, be good to others, be nice, things like that. There's nothing about like, hey, guys, man up, fight. Fight for your spouse, fight for your kids, fight for your soul. Nothing like that is said at most parishes today. And because of that, we're driving young men to the doors. They want nothing to do with it because they're attracted to, naturally, to battle language. Why? Because God made men like that. That's what God, how God made men. He made them to be protectors, protectors of the weak and vulnerable, which means at times they have to fight. And so we have to return to this language of battle. I don't care what the world says. I don't care how they misinterpret like the Atlantic did and act like now all of a sudden we're going to overthrow the government tomorrow, maybe next week. Okay, just kidding, YouTube. Don't take me off for that comment. But the idea is that we have to really double down on our militaristic language, our battle analogies and things like that, because we are in a battle. Now, we have to remember who the enemy is. When you're in a battle, you have to know who the enemy is. The enemy is not ultimately Joe Biden. It's not, this guy who wrote the Atlantic article, already forgot his name, is not him. It's not the somebody like Cardinal Supich, who is working for the devil. It is ultimately the devil himself. And our goal, our duty, is to rescue those enslaved by the devil who are on their side. But it does mean sometimes we have to fight them. We can't just allow them to win, to not fight them. And we have to recognize that they're working for the enemy. We want to convert them to our side. But as long as they're working for the enemy, we have to treat them like the enemy and hopefully convert them over to us. Now, one of the things the article mentioned, and this is, I want to talk about this a little bit. It really is tying in that this rosary of the weapon, really, it's being used by radical traditionalists, Christian nationalists. Let's have a bunch of other things we put in scare quotes as part of a whole movement to glorify violence, glorify physical resistance, to call people to arms, to fight against the powers that are against us, physically fight against them. He talks about survivalists. He talks about militias. He talks about, you know, having guns in your photos on Instagram or whatever with your rosary, things like that. Now, one thing I want to say is I hope and pray that the problems in this country will be resolved peacefully without one shot fired. Obviously, the problem of slavery, that didn't happen. We had the problem of slavery, the deep societal sin of slavery in this nation. It did not end without bloodshed. And our problems today of abortion and the insanity of the woke agenda, pushing the idea that men can be women, women can be men, stuff like that. I pray and hope that that won't require violence to overcome. But I'm also not going to act like it's impossible. That's what's happened in the past. It could happen in the future. But what I noticed was when he talks about this and the scary language about like, oh, these guys are arming for war and stuff like that, he leaves out something very important, which is the fact that we're the ones who are getting attacked in our society. We're the ones who have to protect our Catholic churches. We're the ones who are literally having our churches vandalized and attacked. We're having people invade our masses physically. We're the ones who have crisis pregnancy centers destroyed and vandalized and attacked. We're on the other side of when the riots going on two summers ago, the BLM riots going on. We're on the other side of that. So, and we're the ones who will get fired if we dare say, oh no, actually that dude is a dude. He ain't a woman. We're the ones who get fired for that. So I think it makes sense that Catholics would prepare on how to respond to that. Like, for example, his survivalist crack. It's like, yeah, maybe we are going to prepare for the idea that we might get fired, not have a way to support our families working for a woke corporation anymore. That just is logical. Maybe also we're going to be ready and prepare ourselves if you attack our churches. And we're not going to just let you attack them without us doing anything in response. So, yeah, we're going to be ready for that. We need to be ready for that. And we shouldn't shy away from language that makes it very clear we are going to be ready if somebody comes and attacks our churches. Now, again, we want our first option is always peace. Our first option is always to do whatever we can peacefully. Like, for example, if men bar the doors of a church physically just to keep people from going in, they don't have to attack. They don't have to use violence. They can just stand there and they can prevent most acts these days of violence against the church. That's a peaceful response. That's what we want. We obviously want to be praying our rosaries, which is peaceful. Even though we use a weapon analogy, it's obviously peaceful to pray your rosary. But at the same time, we need to be prepared for the violence of the left, the violence against the anti-Catholic violence of the left. We need to be prepared to how we can defend ourselves from that and how to respond. So, yes, ultimately, number one, we're in a spiritual battle. That's the most important thing. That's what we have to remember. Every single day is a spiritual battle. We need our weapons. Our number one weapon, of course, is the Eucharist, the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, the sacraments, going to confession. That's our top weapons. And then we have the sacramentals, of which I would argue the top sacramental is the rosary. You know, we talked about this last week, the life of prayer, things like that. That's our weapons that we use in this battle. And we should always remember we're in a battle. And we should tell others and remind others you are in a battle. Because if you're not fighting, you're dying. So let's all be fighting. But then also, we do have to be smart, be wise as serpents, and recognize that we could have a physical battle coming to us. I mean, that's just the reality. We're not going to start it. But we also do need to be able to defend ourselves like those European Catholics did so many centuries ago when Islam came and attacked them. They defended themselves. Likewise, we need to do the same. So we can't shy away from language that says, yeah, we will defend ourselves physically if we need to. Hopefully that this language doesn't get me kicked off YouTube, but if it does, c'est la vie. So let me just wrap it up there and just urge people to pray your rosary, That is, as people were saying on Twitter yesterday, unload your clips every day. Unload your clip. You know, just keep firing. You should be firing your 50 Hail Marys. That's 53 or whatever, every single day at least. Go up to 150 if you can. Pray that rosary every single day. Use your weapon. All the other weapons we have at our disposal, the sacraments, of course, being first and foremost, the rosary, other sacramentals, prayer, the reading the Bible, spiritual reading, things like that. But also prepare yourselves to be ready for any type of physical attacks as well. Men out there, your job is to defend your family. You need to be able to do that. And we need to be able to defend our churches, our crisis pregnancy centers, things of that nature as well. So we should be willing and able to do that to the best of our abilities. Okay, that's it for now, everybody. Until next time, God love you.